Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
Let's admit it, we're football fans and we love to see some offense. We want to see points put up on the board, and it's always been that way for at least the last 100 years. But we're going to talk with Tim Brown of footballarchaeology.com once again, and he's going to tell us about a team from 1915 that could put points on the board. Tim's up with the story in just a moment.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at SportsHistoryNetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome once again to the Pig Pen, your portal to positive football history. And it's Tuesday. And once again, we have some football archaeology with Timothy P. Brown, author and a historian that has a great website of footballarchaeology.com. Tim Brown, welcome back to the Pig Pen.
Hey, Darren. Thank you for having me on again. Looking forward to chatting as always.
Yeah, this is a really interesting topic that we're going to talk about, the 1915 Brown Bruins, and have a very interesting story that you shared back on September 2nd, and really enjoying this one, and I think the listeners will as well.
Yeah, well, actually, you know, before chatting about that team, I think it was yesterday or the day before, an RPPC, so a real photo postcard, of that 1915 of Brown's 1915 team sold on eBay for $1,025.
Wow.
So, I mean, that's the, you know, it's not like I've tracked it, you know, over life, but that's, I think, the highest priced postcard I've ever seen. But, you know, it has Fritz Pollard is, you know, is on the team. So a lot of times it, especially older, African-American, you know, football stuff, you know, can command a pretty good price. You know, it's an item that I don't think I've ever seen that one before until it was offered in that particular auction. And then, you know, even like if for NFL people, you know, Fritz Pollard was the first African-American coach in the NFL, you know, back in, I think, 21 or, you know, something along those lines. So, you know, but just a couple of interests kind of collide, and all of a sudden you're paying some pretty big money,
you know, right,
for a postcard.
He was a tremendous player as well. I mean, every team that he went to, he really brought their game up quite a bit to a different level. So that's another reason to want to collect that, to have a legendary player. So,
yeah. Right. Well, you know, so the thing about that, you know, the 1915 team, you know, is, you know, Brown, I think, you know, by and large has been kind of a second tier program, you know, and it was at the time. I mean, and I'm comparing that to Harvard, Yale, Princeton, Penn, and then, you know, probably like West Point. Those were probably the premier, you know, year after year premier programs. But they had a long-term coach at Brown, you know, during some of that period. And, you know, they have some pretty competitive teams. And so they actually, I think they ended up, they were, they surprisingly beat Yale that year, which they seldom did, but that was the Yale team, the 1915 Yale team. Frank Hinkey had come back to coach the team in 14, and they kind of struggled, and then they were really struggling in 15, and that was the year that the captain, Alex Wilson, fired the head coach. So he fired Hinkey, and he brought in Tom Shevlin to come in and, you know, kind of fix things up for the last couple of games of the year. But, you know, part of his being fired was, Hickey's being fired was that they lost to Brown. So, you know, it was, I think that's the last instance I'm aware of where, you know, that was the last year Yale still had that, the captain runs the show, you know, kind of philosophy. But, you know, he literally fired the coach because his word was final. And then they, you know, they switched things up at, you know, the following year. So that was, you know, kind of an interesting element of it. And even, you know, to kind of the perspective of Percy Haughton, who was the coach at Harvard, didn't even go, or he wasn't there for the Harvard Brown game because, you know, he thought it more important to go scout Yale. You know, and coaches used to do that sometimes. Stagg did that a few times. And, you know, you read about it, you know, here and there, people did that. So, I mean, it just kind of tells you that it was a real upset. You know, right. The head coach didn't even show up for the game.
But that sounds, I mean, it sounds so strange, but I think you explained it the last time we had you on. We talked about the first coach when the word coach was used, just recently aired and as a podcast. And you know, you explained to that the coaches really were important, not really as important game time as the captains were, like they are today.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. So the captains called the plays. There was no coaching from the sideline. All of that, you know.
The practice week was done, so he could go scout the teams and the captain takes over.
Yeah. I mean, that to some extent that, you know, that is the case. But then, you know, so the other thing that's just kind of interesting about that team and football in general at the time was Harvard, Yale, and Princeton had policies that they didn't go to bowl games. Right. And, you know, this is still, you know, they didn't have postseason games. And so this is, you know, the Rose Bowl had a game back in 02, and then that was kind of forgotten. And then they were restarting it for 1916. So they're inviting, you know, the best team they could get from the East that played in the 1915 season. But, you know, so Harvard, Yale, Princeton wouldn't go. And so, you know, Brown ended up being, you know, the best team that they could find, you know, who would say yes. You know, and so then they did whatever, the 5-day, you know, train trip out to Pasadena. But, you know, there were, you know, the Big Ten didn't allow teams to play in postseason games. They did allow Ohio State to play in the Rose Bowl, I think in 22, I think it was. You know, and so just in general, and then even teams that did, where the school or the faculty allowed it, you know, sometimes the kids just said, "Yeah, we're done." You know, they were just done with the season, and you know, they'd already turned in their equipment, whatever. They didn't want to spend time away from family for the holidays, you know, those kinds of things. So, I mean, it was just a different world. You know, we now so many teams play in bowls, you know, to begin with, but. It's just kind of the expectation of, you know, well, of course you're going to go to the bowl. But back then, you know, a lot of times, you know, teams had the opportunity to go, turned them down. But so Brown ended up, you know, playing in the game, and then they lost to Washington State. So, you know, that was kind of for the folks out West, that was a big deal. It's, you know, kind of a credibility boost that one of their teams could play and beat, you know, a team that's now, you know, of the Ivy, you know, caliber. So, you know, it's a big, you know, kind of a big deal, you know, for those folks.
Yeah. So, okay. So we already said that Fritz Pollard was on that team. Was there anybody else significant on that team besides Pollard?
Yeah. One of their, Wade, now I'm blanking on his name. Wade. He was a guard or tackle. Wallace Wade, sorry. And so he was, he coached Alabama, took them, you know, to a couple of Rose Bowls. And then he was the coach at Duke for quite a while. And they played when Oregon State played the Rose Bowl at Duke because of the bombing of Pearl Harbor. You know, so the 42 Rose Bowl Wade was still the coach there. So, but he, so he is, he and Pollard are probably the most most famous of the Brown players that year.
Huh, very interesting, and some great research, and we appreciate you sharing these teams and some of these innovations from football from so long ago at your football archaeology site. Why don't you share with people how they can, you can find your tidbits that you share with us each and every day, and how they can subscribe to your website to make sure they know when that you release them.
Sure. So, my website is just, footballarchaeology.com. You can also find me on Twitter under the same name. And, the gist of it is I publish a tidbit every day, comes out at 7 o'clock Eastern time. And so if you subscribe, you'll get that, as an emailed newsletter. And then obviously if you're, you can also just visit the site anytime you want. And, there's a full archives in there with, now getting on, 300, some article, full length, long form articles. Or tidbits, which tend to be more, 30-second to a minute long reads.
Okay.
So just little snippets.
And I can tell you that it is exactly right at 7 p.m. It's very consistent because usually my family and I were watching a rerun of The Big Bang Theory, and the chime for my email, signal, my notification comes right at the same time of the theme song for Big Bang Theory every time. So it's like part of the song to us now. So.
Well, it's... just gets scheduled in the application.
Yeah. Oh, you could have just take more punctuality credit for than that. Don't,
well, you know, so I still have to manually do it on Twitter. So, but then it's going to be at 703, 705, somewhere in that range.
Yeah. We're well into the show by then. So,
yeah. So.
All right, Tim. Well, thank you very much. And we'll talk to you again next week with some more great football archaeology.
Cool. We'll see you next week. Thanks, Darren.
That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hey there, football fans. This is Ross, the host of the Pigskin Tales podcast. I just need a few moments of your time to talk about the host of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, Darren Hayes. He's expanded the Pigpen to search out information on the history of all team sports. It's a quest to find out about the competitors, teams, and places chronicled throughout athletic history through the uniforms and gear the participants used and wore. And he is taking you, the listener, with him on this educational journey to preserve sports history on the Sports Jersey Dispatch, found here on the Sports History Network. His newest podcast, called Jersey Dispatch, is all based on the jerseys that all the greats used to wear. You can find Darren Hayes and the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, as well as Jersey Dispatch, on your favorite podcast provider multiple times each week. So remember that Darren Hayes, the host of the Pigskin Dispatch and Jersey Dispatch podcasts, is found right here on the Sports History Network.